Welcome to Migrant in Business Pod, the Migrant Entrepreneurship Podcast series powered by Euclid Network. In this episode, you will learn how to access funding. When you start a business, it's important for every entrepreneur to receive funding. Financing a startup can be quite a task for local entrepreneurs, so imagine how hard this is for migrant entrepreneurs. What are the challenges for migrant entrepreneurs when they need funding, and what are the solutions? My name is Annette van Soest, and with me are T.L. Riula. Did I say that correctly?
You said that correctly, yes.
Born in Kuwait, but his passport says unknown birthplace because he has no birth certificate. With his own company, Tyken, he is solving the paper-based identity problem with blockchain. And my second guest is Ronald Kleverlaan, alternative finance expert and as such advisor to the European Commission. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tay, when you started as an entrepreneur, you couldn't open a bank account. You ended up receiving a lot of, how many million euros in funding?
In total, it is 1.6 million.
So you've come a long way.
Yes.
But first, can you tell us in short what your company Tyken does?
We are a tech for good platform. We are building an open source identity system for NGOs and their partners so that they're able to onboard their beneficiaries. In our cases, it's the refugees, in a very efficient manner, in a very safe manner. And most importantly, being digital, that means we can attach services like digital money, digital healthcare, and digital education. I always say to achieve the UN SDGs, going digital is one of the most important things that organizations, the corporate sector needs to do, move into the digital transformation. But in our age today, it is not enough. It needs to be private and secure. And that's what we do at Tyken. We are bringing portability, security, and privacy to our digital identities.
It's meant for refugees who are staying in refugee camps?
Yeah, this is where our first, let's say, target market looks like. Refugees living in long displacement camps. So I'm specifically now narrowing down a little bit on who can use our services. Organizations that run long displacement camps, or what we call the LDCs, and the people inside them, they can benefit from our services.
Are NGOs already using your service?
We have a collaboration with one of the largest NGOs in the world. There is...
Which one?
We have a collaboration with the 510 data team of Red Cross. And together we looked at one-to-one.global as a platform to achieve the mission and the vision that we have. It is, I mean, nobody has looked at it so far. Nobody has looked if these confined areas, refugee camps, is there talent inside? Is there an economy inside? Can they contribute to the host countries that they are living in? I think Tyken has moved a long way forward in that road. Today we are seeing many impact accelerators, many impact investment funds looking also at refugee camps and see how they can empower the people inside. So in the end, what I believe in is don't give the refugees money and tell them sit at home or sit in the camp. They can do much more than that, not only for their benefit, but for the benefit of the host country.
And that's where Tyken...
That's where the whole thing starts with an identity. How do we know who are we buying from? How do we know who are we selling to? How do we know that this person who's taking a food voucher has taken one, two, or five? Is he registered in five different systems? Or he's not registered at all. All data today is the most important thing that we need to look at when working with such vulnerable communities.
You lived as an invisible man in the Netherlands when your work contract expired. You ended up in an asylum center. Your birth certificate got lost during the Gulf War in Kuwait. What's the biggest obstacle when you're starting a business with unknown birthplace on your ID?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think I always say I'm blessed to be the invisible man, but I had to live that life as well to earn the title. or else I wouldn't be calling myself the Invisible Man simply because I don't have a place of birth on my passport or my driving license. So living the life of the Invisible Man means that you have to live in a place that is far away from what you call home, even if it's in the same country, without any form of identity, without your driving license, without your passport, without your library card, without any sort of information that verifies who you are. The only thing that I hang onto is this A4 piece of paper that the camp has given me with my picture, my first name, my last name, and all the details that follow after that.
But you wanted to start a company.
Exactly. I lost my company before I went to the refugee camps. One of the things that people don't know about the Invisible Man is I had a Bitcoin mining business here in the Netherlands, in The Hague. So I was one of the earliest Bitcoin miners in the Netherlands. And I wanted to go commercial and sell my equipment to the public. But the asylum was calling me earlier than that. So I had to shut down my business. I lost my domain because I couldn't renew it. I couldn't pay to renew my domain. And this is where I thought, okay, if the Dutch government would allow me to stay in the Netherlands, I'm going to definitely continue in another business. But 1.5 years passed and still no identity, no bank account, nothing at all.
How did you get out of that situation?
That was the big question mark. How can I move on? Mm-hmm. How can I not... My thinking at that time was so narrow, just thinking about the food that I want to eat. How can I stop eating the same menu that I've been eating, given food by the NGO? How can I change that? We tried to talk to them and said, hey, can we, maybe refugees can cook in the kitchen. We know how to cook and we can feed ourselves. They said, no, there is too many risk factors involved. You're not insured. Maybe you'll get burned. Maybe an accident happens. I said, okay. So I went to Bitcoin, the same thing that I started in 2012. There is a website in the Netherlands called thuisbezorg.nl where you can order food by paying with Bitcoin. And this is where it all started. So through that pizza order I did, I broke the walls of Ter Apel. I broke the walls of the refugee camp. I ordered pizza delivered to my room. And this is where I thought, okay, if we have that technology and is able to break the barriers and the regulations that third parties put on you, can we do it also for identity? So having the smartphone and the Bitcoin wallet was the first dollar I made in financing my route to start Tyken.
Every entrepreneur has to open a bank account. Or did you use Bitcoin
Definitely.
As a starting point?
Yes, we used Bitcoin as a starting point because I was on what we call in Dutch uitkering or social services. So I earn approximately 50 euros a week. It is not enough to commute to the accelerator in Amsterdam and validate the business idea that we had.
Because you entered the startup
exactly.
program Rockstart?
Exactly. After I finished my refugee asylum process, we joined an accelerator in Amsterdam to start working on Tyken. Commitment was asked from us, so I had to commute every day from Den Haag to Amsterdam. You're talking about almost 50 euros a week on train tickets.
Transport costs.
Yes.
Yep.
Transport costs are approximately from Den Haag to Amsterdam and vice versa is 50 euros a day. Well, my outgetting was 50 euros a week.
So there's your first problem.
That was my first problem, going to the accelerator. So
I'm
earning my money through Bitcoin. So I translate documents from English to Arabic. I get paid in Bitcoin. I write articles for reporters. I get paid in Bitcoin. I moderate Facebook pages. I get paid in Bitcoin. So I do digital work and I get digital money. And that digital money, I transferred it into physical money and I paid for my train cards and I was able to go to Amsterdam.
Ronald Kleverlaan, what do you think of Tay's story? Do you hear a lot of stories like this?
I think this is a really inspiring story. This is, of course, much further than most of the entrepreneurs have to go to really start a company. And what you see, of course, with a lot of entrepreneurs is that they really find their own way to make their money? And is it through digital work, digital payments? Yes, that's very inspiring.
It takes endurance to start a company, but in this case...
extra endurance. Mm-hmm. It's extra difficult. But I think now the main challenge is, of course, if you really want to scale up, you cannot just do it with digital money. You need to have additional funding. You have to raise additional funding now. And of course, this is also what he has done nowadays also. And that's the next challenge, because it's in the financial industry, everything is about trust. And if you don't have a bank account, if you don't have a birth certificate, how do people trust you or your company? So I think that's also the next step and the next challenge that
he has. But isn't that the whole point of blockchain, that you take out the middleman, the bank?
It's a different model indeed, and to build trust.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree. In the real world, building trust is entitled to the human relation. Even blockchain as a technology, if the human didn't register good data, then what you get out is simply crap. Blockchain does not clean your data. Blockchain does not authenticate or make it more trustworthy. It is only a way to prove an event in a certain period of time without going to that person himself. That all what it does. But is this event authentic or not? We don't know. It goes back to the trust factor.
How did you, because at first you used digital money, digital work for digital money, but you had to raise funding, real money,
yes,
at some point.
Yes.
How did you do that?
There is two sides for the story here. Side one is, if it's meant to be, it will happen. No matter what you do, good things will happen if it's meant to be. What do I mean by that? By chance, by pure chance, I attended the Impact Festival in Amsterdam. Case Colin, the founder of Booking.com, was walking out of the festival, and I was entering the festival. I stopped him and asked him, to thank him for supporting Rockstart and the accelerator and the startups inside the Rockstart, which we are one of them. We had a half espresso, so you know how an espresso is really small in size. We had even a half one, and it was about 30 seconds where Case asked me, how's your business going on? What challenges are you facing? And how can I help? So in those 30 seconds, I explained to him what the challenges we're facing. We need money. We just took 5,000 euros from the accelerator, but in order to work more on our product and for Tycoon to survive, we need an investment. And he asked me, where would this money go through? I explained to him, I need to pay for the office and continue developing the product. So in 30 seconds, we shook hand on our first investment deal, 250,000 euros. It was done over a half of cup of espresso.
That was a very good elevator pitch.
When I saw Case back in the GS Summit, the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, he was telling everyone there how Tay raised his first 250,000 euros in less than 30 seconds. So I think that is, raising your first capital is the most important thing in any startup.
True, Ronald?
True. And what you see here is also that it's not something that happens automatically, because you were there and you were speaking with him. And that's one of the first things, of course, I always tell with entrepreneurs. If you really want to start and you want to start raising funding, start practicing, because it's not your first pitch. It's not your first conversation with an investor. And the more you tell, the more you can convince them. And you just have to close your first deal. And based on the first deal, they will introduce you to another investor. And then you can raise your next round.
Especially if you have stage fright, like me in the beginning. I was afraid to talk to people. I'm afraid to stand on stage. To talk with such a great guy, Case, it was an amazing experience, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think that every entrepreneur will recognize that stage fright, because everybody, for the first step to stand out for the crowd and to ask for something, that's really, really difficult.
Yes.
But you have to do it, take that step, take the first step. That's an important element in Rockstart, of course, also.
Yeah. I think the alignment that happened with us is like destiny was smiling at us at that day, and you really have to work hard for it, so that it can come to you. And as you said, you have to ask.
Why, Ronald, is it so important to get out there? And isn't it almost impossible for starting entrepreneurs to receive a loan from traditional lenders such as banks?
Yeah, so that's one of the problems, of course, with starting entrepreneurs is that bank financing is really, really hard to get. And it's only getting worse, not only in the Netherlands, it's in most European countries. It's really difficult to get additional funding from a bank. That's because a bank doesn't take any risks. They just want to make sure that if they give you the money, that they have a 99% security that they will get their money back. So for a starting entrepreneur, a bank is not interesting. So most of them go to business angels or to venture capital. And that's the way Tay did also, and he did very successful. But most entrepreneurs forget that there are a dozen different alternatives next to a bank, next to venture capital or a business angel.
But when we talk about alternative finance, we are talking about everything outside of the bank.
Yes. So and that's very diverse. So
can you give a few different examples?
Yeah, so sometimes if you want to have a short-term loan and you just need to have some funding for a couple of months, there are a couple of providers that provide you that loan because you just have to invest a small amount of money. But that's not an equity investment, so you don't have to give away shares, but it's just a loan. So that's, for example, another example. But sometimes you need equipment. And the equipment, you can buy everything or you can just lease it. And next to leasing is a common way of financing your equipment, but normally only with a bank. And then there are a lot of restrictions there. But nowadays, there are new leasing companies that are offering very high-tech, fintech solutions for you to make to even lease second-hand equipment, for example, because they know how to evaluate that equipment. And that's and one of the things is that it's possible because of new fintech solutions make it easier, quicker, simpler to provide these leasing contracts.
There's one thing that you haven't mentioned yet, and that's crowdfunding. I think that's the most common thing that people think of when they think of alternative finance.
Yeah, so that's indeed, I didn't want to start with it, but it's a good end. And because I think that is also a very powerful way for migrant entrepreneurs to raise funding. And the potential for crowdfunding is that it is community funding. So you have to find a community or you have to reach out to a community that really wants to finance your project or your company. And the interesting thing is if you are building a community and that community is helping you with raising the money, it will also help you with your marketing effort with your sales activities. So you have a sales force of 1,000 or 2,000 people perhaps that all invested in your company. And you don't have to give away shares or voting rights. Sometimes they just provide you a loan. And even if they are having some shares, you can even give away shares without voting rights. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is, these 1,000 people, they are all ambassadors for your company. So they will help you to reach out to your customers, perhaps even to follow-up investment rounds. And most of the time, it is the first step. So we talked before about that you have to reach out and you have to talk and you have to convince people. With crowdfunding, it's the same. You have to convince a lot of individual people, but every time, every person you speak to, you improve your story and you learn how to sell your company there. So therefore, crowdfunding is a very good way to raise at least your first funding rounds. And perhaps in a later round, when you need a strategic investor to open up certain markets, then you can try to find someone else. But then it really, really helps for these investors if you have done a successful crowdfunding round already, because they know you can sell.
You touch a very important point, I think, because how do you know which type of funding is the right fit for you at that specific time?
That's indeed a very good question, because that's the most important question I get most of the time. And the problem is there's not a simple answer because there are a lot of different funding options available for certain stages. But one of the good things is that we have now a diversity in funding alternative finance models available. So you can use business angels, venture capital, crowdfunding, and these and a lot of other types. But the risk there is that it's very difficult for an entrepreneur to know exactly where to get started. Not only with what type of financing you need, but also which provider, which business angel, or what crowdfunding platform should you reach out to? So my advice normally is reach out to other entrepreneurs who have done it before, talk with them, ask why they chose this, or go to an advisor. There are good financial advisors at this time. They're working at impact centers, they're working at government organizations, but these are also independent advisors. They know the ecosystem. They know in what stage, what kind of investors you can and should talk to. And one of the models, of course, to learn these advisors and also to get to learn more about the different alternative types of finance, go to investor events. There are a lot of events organized everywhere in the Netherlands where investors pitch, where entrepreneurs pitch, where you can learn a lot about what the options are.
Tay, recently Tycon has received an investment of 1.2 million euros from a Dutch IT entrepreneur,
yep.
Johan Masterbroek. How did you convince this business angel to invest in your company?
Now, here we come to the second part of the story, as I referred earlier. After we got the investment from Case, we soon found out about strategic investment, something that you talked about now. I would agree with you. There is no way that you can find what you need in the beginning. You have to grab what you have, what comes to you. Case is a great guy, but he's a busy guy. So we couldn't really get the advice. We couldn't really get what we wanted in the beginning from him. We got the money. That's it. So now in our second investment round, we were looking for that strategic person who doesn't only bring the money, but brings additional value. Could be developers, if you're a software company, could be more clients, could be just simply meeting with you on a weekly basis and giving you the advice for how to run the company. The second investment happened more because of a teamwork. It wasn't only me. My co-founders, Jimmy Snook, Khaled Maliki, they were with the Dutch government in a delegation to the United Nations annual meeting in New York. It happened in September. This is where it was the first time that the Tycon team met Johan face to face. Johan, of course, he's an investor in different IT companies, and his employees and his colleagues at work were always present around Tycon, whether it's in pitches, whether it's in awards that we were winning. So they were always giving him those news updates. Oh, look, Tycon, what they've done this month, or look, Tycon won this award, or look, Tycon has done this collaboration. So he was learning about us. He was studying us for a year almost until he decided, okay, I want now to put money in it.
He was already studying the company.
Definitely.
Without any cups of espresso.
Without any espresso, without even looking at it.
Uh-huh.
So December came, we basically ran out of money. We needed to raise funds really fast. The mistake we did is we waited till the end to raise money. We didn't plan for it properly times ahead and times before. But he came in a time where we needed the money, and he was bringing some strategic partnerships with one of his IT companies, Legit Leopard. They're a development powerhouse for blockchain applications in Amsterdam. So now Tycon doesn't only have access to the funds, but we have access to the talent. And in the blockchain industry today, the number one challenge for any company to scale up and to move forward is the lack of talent and not the lack of money. So that's why we are really happy with Johan stepping in as a strategic investor. Yeah, I think it is all lessons learned.
Ronald, how developed is alternative financing in Europe when you look at the different countries? Are there big differences?
Yeah, there are very big differences. So you see in Western Europe and also the Netherlands, and especially the UK, they are front runners. You see that alternative finance is very well developed there. You have a supporting ecosystem. The government is promoting alternative finance a lot. it's a big market. Around 10 billion euro is being raised already, of being invested already every year through alternative finance. So it's a big industry already.
In which countries?
In Europe. So in Europe. It's mostly UK, Netherlands, Germany, and France. More than 9 billion of the 10 billion in Europe is invested there. So that's a big market already. The Dutch market, in the Netherlands, we have around 1 billion euro. So we also a big player in Europe, especially based on our size. And we get also a lot of support from the Dutch government. So it's you see the industry is growing more than 50% every year nowadays. And especially for the starting companies, small companies, it's already 10% of all the funding is being raised through alternative finance.
But that means that in other parts of Europe, it's still very underdeveloped.
Yeah, that's true. And you see that the growth of that ecosystem, alternative finance ecosystem, that is 3-4 years behind what we are here in the Netherlands, and perhaps 6-7 years behind what's happening now in the UK. So the UK were really the first ones. We are 2 years behind, 3 years behind them. And I think in Eastern Europe, they are 5-6 years behind UK. Okay.
So alternative financing is a growth market, a growing market. In the Netherlands alone, like 200 companies are active in this field, but not all parties can be trusted. There are some cowboys amongst these companies. So as an entrepreneur looking for funding, how do you know who to trust and who not?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because that's very difficult to see. They have nice websites. They have good account managers telling what they're offering. But as an entrepreneur, you don't have a clue about the type of financing they're offering, if that's valuable for you, if that's the right phase in the growth of your company that you are using that. So one of the tips I always give is use that financial advisor, what I said before. I think that's a very important one. If you want to raise money, find someone to mentor you, to help you, or even support you with the application to the right platform. Another tip is, we started in the Netherlands last year, Stichting MKB Financiering. So that's an independent foundation that is monitoring the alternative finance industry. It has developed a code of conduct already.
Finished?
Yeah, it is finished. Okay. It is published already. And we are now auditing the 200 companies in the Netherlands to find out which are trustfulness. So which one are helping the entrepreneur enough, giving the right funding at the right moment, of course. And also that the costs are okay, because some of them have very high costs, and that will only hinder you as a company. It will really not support you with growth.
Is it more difficult for a migrant entrepreneur to receive financing?
From traditional sources, yes. So because for traditional sources, not only from banks, but normally also from regionale ontwikkelingsmaatschappijen, so the regional investment organizations in the Netherlands, they are using normal structured ways of finding their entrepreneurs, meeting them, but also evaluating the risks. And that's really difficult, of course, for migrant entrepreneurs to convince them most of the time, especially if you don't have a registration, a birth certificate. And some of them are just legal, because know your customer regulations for banks are very, very strict. They get a lot of problems normally in the media also if they don't comply with the rules, for example, for anti-money laundering. So therefore, it's very difficult for banks to provide loans, for example, for migrant entrepreneurs. But you see now that especially impact investors, they are overcome these problems, and they look into the potential of people, and they look into the potential of a company. And of course, they want to know who the founders are and what their background is. But it doesn't have to be a problem. The only biggest challenge, additional challenge migrant entrepreneurs have, is that they don't have the network. They don't know to what event they have to go. They don't get the invitations to go to the investor events.
Tay, how did you know where to go?
I was lucky. I was lucky because when I became a refugee, before that, I was living in the Netherlands. So I have an exposure to the Dutch events, to the Dutch networking events. Part of my job as a software trainer, whether in Dubai or in the Netherlands, is to organize also these seminars and workshops on the latest trends on technology and software development.
So you had a head start.
I had a head start, and I think that's why out of the, 50, 75,000 refugees we have here in the Netherlands, I was the only one to start a company while I am in the camp. And I had that drive from day one because I consider myself to be Dutch.
What would you advise other migrants who want to start their own business?
My advice would be is just to do it. Don't let your family, friends, neighbors, whoever you talk to put you down. It is a very long journey. It is a very risky journey. Not only have the network of people who have money around you, but have the people around you that can support you emotionally, that can support you psychologically, that can provide good food for you, because that's what you need. So my wife, you know, my friends, my team members, they all contributed to the person I am today and to the company that we have built. I think money is the last thing that you need to worry about, because if you have a good solution and if you're solving a problem that is scalable, then money will come to you.
Ronald, any final thoughts?
Just to reflect on the last word, I don't agree that money automatically will go to you, but indeed you need to have a good plan, but also you have to work hard indeed. So, and that's what you've done. You've been reaching out to all these networks and to all these people and try to convince them and never give up. And I think that's one of the most important
especially when
here.
You are in the impact industry. We're not building the next Instagram here. We don't build something that can translate in profits tomorrow. Impact investments are about changing how the world works. That's what that differentiates us from social entrepreneurs. We don't make profits and reinvest them. We are at doing both at the same time,
doing business.
You have to make a lot of money, and you have to make good business. You have to pay back good to your community.
Yeah.
And it's not I sell you a shoe, you donate one. No, it is literally impacting the lives of people positively.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
Thank
Tay El Riula and Ronald Kleverlaan. If you want to know more about access to finance, you can go to linktr.ee/Euclid and you will find a couple of links to useful websites. Thanks for listening to Migrant in Business Pod, the Migrant Entrepreneurship Podcast series powered by Euclid Network. See you next time.